Chairman, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, our country has been caught in the middle of a dangerous tug of war. Powerful forces have been pulling and hauling our people about, threatening to upset their equilibrium. Our political, economic, and social system has been forced to withstand the shocks of world upheavals. Now the outbreak of a new and disastrous war in Europe threatens even more seriously to upset our balance, our reasoning, and our sane sense of values. Therefore, it becomes imperative that we take stock. We must see where we stand. We must see where other nations stand. We must know what we want, and then we must determine how to get it. Compared with other nations, America is in an enviable position today. True, we have our troubles. First of these is an unemployment problem which has been chronic for the past 10 years. Almost continuously during that long period, as many as 10 million of our people, although willing and able to work, have been unable to obtain jobs in private industry. The responsibility for providing relief to the unemployed has been accepted by our federal government. The money cost has been staggering. It has overburdened the nation with debt. But perhaps the moral cost has been greater. It has created dangerous unrest and dissatisfaction with our system of government. At the same time, we have been plagued by a persistent farm problem. It has not been a plague of scarcity, but of plenty. The problem of surplus control and price control are still unsolved, both in farm production and industrial production. Government subsidies has given some relief to farmers, but have not cured their ills. This is not a cheerful picture I have presented thus far. I have not tried to minimize our troubles. But there is another side to this picture. Let us look at this other side. Despite our heavy national debt, the credit of the government of the United States still is the highest in the world. Despite the vast extent of unemployment, no one is starving in America. In fact, the American standard of living is far and away the highest in the world. Those who are employed, thanks to the efforts of organized labor, receive an ever-increasing rate of pay. Even the minimum wage and hour standards set by law in this country come close to matching maximum standards for similar work in other countries. Conditions of American farmers are immeasurably better than the farmers in other countries enjoy. American industry still is operating at a profit, and somewhat ironically, both farmers and industry stand to improve their status in the near future due to the European war. So far, I have touched only on the material side of the picture. I've been talking merely about bread and butter. But you will agree with me that there are more important things in life. Let us take stock further. We can do this perhaps by contrast. In Europe and in Asia, war has engulfed the great nations of our world. The lives of men and women are being sacrificed to the war machine. Those not drafted for service at the front go about their daily tasks in constant fear. They must carry gas masks ready for instant use. They must build bomb shelters in their backyards. Those who live in cities must part with their children and see them evacuated for safety's sake. We in America have been spared that. We are at peace. Our young men are not being drafted for military service. Our children are not being taught to put on gas masks. We do not have to undergo blackouts at night as protection against air raids. We can look up at the skies without a fear of rain or death. In Russia, in Germany, and in Italy, democracy died. The voice of the people in these countries has been stilled. They have no rights, merely duties. They are slaves. Common justice is denied to them. They dare not act. They dare not speak. They dare not even think in accordance with the dictates of their conscience. To say that the people of a country have been deprived of their liberty does not alone convey the terrible conditions under which the citizens of Russia, Germany, and Italy are forced to live. Let us examine these conditions more closely as they apply to the daily lives of these unfortunate people. In Soviet Russia, under the autocratic form of government, men and women are put to work in factories and on farms by the government, which consists of one man, dictator Stalin alone. They are ordered to take certain jobs. They are given a certain amount of pay, a pitifully small amount. They are not permitted to complain even. It is against the law for the government is their employer. They are not permitted to ask for more pay. It is against the law. They are not permitted to seek out a better job with more pay. It is against the law. Even with the money that is doled out to them, they are not permitted to do as they please. They cannot buy what they want. The government regulates that too. Even the amount of flour that goes into their daily bread is fixed by government decree. For a working man or a group of workers to go on strike is a criminal offense. The newspaper a Russian reads is printed by the government. It contains only reading matter approved by the government. The movies in the theaters are produced by the government. They contain only the kind of entertainment the government decrees is suitable for the people. No man can stand up and express opposition to the government. That is a crime. A Russian dare not even think his government is wrong. The secret police are too active. Common justice is unknown. A man or woman may be not denounced and condemned without the semblance of a fair trial. Political offenders are executed at the whim of the dictator or his lieutenants. The people are permitted to vote in elections, but they can vote only one way, yes. If they vote no, their lives are in danger. To worship God is to become immediately suspected. The churches have been entirely destroyed. God forbid that ever such a condition should come to America. It is not my purpose to compare these conditions point by point with conditions in our own country. All of us can do that for ourselves. Now let us take a look at Germany. The picture is virtually the same as in Russia, except that in Germany, a man named Hitler rules instead of Stalin. Conditions of the common people are in some respects worse. In Germany, if you are a Jew, even the right to work is denied you. Persecutions are more vicious and punishments more severe than in the dark days of the Middle Ages. Concentration camps are crowded with helpless victims of oppression. Every thought and action of the people is regimented. Private industry and private capital still exist, but are under severe restrictions. At any moment, they may be wiped out by edict. And as if the sufferings of the German people were not terrible enough before, they have now been plunged into a senseless and disastrous war by order of a dictator greedy for power. Stalin has his followers and his agents in this country. We find them in the Communist Party. We find them outside of the Communist Party. We find them in high and influential positions in our government, in our schools, and in some of our so-called labor organizations, not affiliated, however, with the American Federation of Labor. Hitler and his followers and his agents are in this country. We find them in the German Bund. We find them in hundreds of organizations, hundreds of propaganda agencies, and in phony patriotic organizations. What have they tried to sell us? The Stalinists have cried out against the dangers of fascism and Nazism. They have warned us that America will fall prey to Hitler and to Mussolini unless it accepts the teachings and the rule of Stalin. And the Hitlerites have screamed warnings against communism. They have told us Hitler saved Europe from communism and wants to save America from communism. Now the essential fraud in all this propaganda has been exposed. Hitler and Stalin, under the pressure of events in Europe, have become partners. They have teamed up together to crush the last remnants of democracy and freedom in Europe. We see them with their armies marching side by side, carving up Poland between them. We see them stripped of all idealistic pretense, plotting together to seize every other weak nation in Europe. I said earlier that America must take stock and it must know what it wants. We have now taken stock of communism, Nazism, and fascism. We do not want them. We do not want any part of them and will have no part of them. We want democracy. We want it and we're going to keep it. We will not surrender our liberty and our freedom.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard William Green, President of the American Federation of Labor, address the 1,000 delegates of the League of Human Rights, Freedom, and Democracy, gathered here in the Hall of Mirrors of the Netherland Plaza Hotel in Cincinnati.